Hebrew Institute, which got me involved, to my son, he was bar mitzvah there, had a wonderful bar mitzvah, and it was very, I'll talk about that under organizations later, but in the meantime, this got my foot in the door as far as getting back to the Jewish community. And then the Jewish community really became part of our lives, just even to a greater extent than had been the musical community. We then later got involved with AIPAC. I've been involved since with politics because of AIPAC, AIPAC being the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, and because of my affiliation with that organization, which is strictly a lobbying organization, it became inevitable that the very people who you lobby then turn to you for help when their elections start, so that I've been knee-deep in election politics since my involvement with AIPAC, and I guess that dates back to mid to late 80s. About 1990, well, by the late 80s, my kids had all left home. Adam graduated from University of Pittsburgh Graduate School in Public Affairs. He then went to Washington, to Baltimore, because his fiancée at that time had a scholarship to attend graduate school at Johns Hopkins, and the scholarship came from the National Federation of Jewish Philanthropy. So we've all been involved with the Jewish community. She was in her graduate school work at Johns Hopkins, and he went to join her after he graduated, and then they planned to marry after she graduated, and they decided to stay in Baltimore. So they're in Baltimore, and in the past 4 years have given us, much to our delight, two wonderful grandchildren.
What was her name?
Lisa Hahn. She came from the Massachusetts region. She has a brother who is a professor at Brandeis University, a very well-known professor at Brandeis. She has another brother who has worked in the music business in New York City. Lisa has...
your biography.
Yeah, okay.
How do you spell Hahn?
H-A-H-N.
H-A...
So Lisa and Adam both worked, and Adam now, by serendipity, ended up, believe it or not, working for the council, or the... the CRC in Baltimore. He met a wonderful man who got him involved in that, and he went back to be with his fiancée, and then after they married in Boston, Massachusetts, and came back, he took a job there.
Community Relations Council.
He then took a job, arose to the position of the associate director of that agency, which is a big agency in Baltimore. Baltimore is a big Jewish community. About a year or two ago, he moved over to the United Jewish Fund, which in Baltimore is called the Associated, and he's where he is at the present time. So it's very interesting that much of his work has to do with the relationship between Pittsburgh Jewish community and the Baltimore Jewish community, and thus we have many contacts in common. He, in the meantime, has two children. Fidel and I tried to see at every opportunity. The young lady, my grandchild, his name is Hannah. We have a sorry problem, and that is that Hannah has a speech difficulty. She goes to private schools since she's 2 years old to try to pick up speech. So we're very much involved with her in this level. She's a wonderful girl in every other way, has much talent, as a matter of fact. the young boy, who is now about 8 months, is just starting to crawl.
Dave, I don't want to hear about your grandchildren crawling.
Okay.
So
this is a late start for me.
Okay, did we get your grandson's name?
His name is Philip Max. Philip Max. I have two children, both in New York, neither are married, and Fidel and I remain in Pittsburgh and maintain our home and our activities in the community. In 1990, I guess it was, I was called and was asked to consider going back into the United Jewish Fund work by the then head of the United Jewish Fund. And I said, well, I thought that it was time that I did, because I was beginning to slow down and aim toward retirement, and I figured it was time that maybe I should do that. Therefore, in 1990, I reorganized something that had been organized in the past and then fell into disrepute, and that was the Physicians Division. It was very interesting, but I learned that there were 1,000 Jewish physicians, approximately, in Pittsburgh in 1990.
Now, what a difference.
What a difference in the days when I was started out in medicine, where Montefiore was the only place. Now we had to deal with 28 hospitals, all of which had Jewish physicians. So it became a major organization task to involve Jewish physicians. Why it became important is this. We were not developing in Pittsburgh a new progressive, enlarging business community, as we had once done. Merchants were the usual road that most Jews followed, merchandising of one sort or another. As we discussed before, they couldn't become engineers like Howard. They couldn't become physicians because there was a numerous classes. So they were either lawyers or they were in business, and now we were confronted with a declining Jewish population, and therefore, how do we make up for this? Well, this is an area that I got involved in. It became an important contribution to the Jewish community because I was able to demonstrate that these doctors wanted to be involved. All they needed to do, by and large, was to be confronted. And it took a lot of effort and organization to do that. So the first year, I actually did this for 2 years. By the end of the second year, I would say, we had contacted about 600 of the 1,000, and we managed that time to increase giving by, I forget the percentage, but by a substantial percentage. And as a matter of fact, the UJF increased that year its collection by about 15 or 18%, I forget now the numbers, but the largest percentage of that came from physicians. So this became so important to the UGF that I was given a lot of credit for that. And as part of this, in order to keep the Jewish physicians involved, I started a Maimonides Society. Now, the idea of a Maimonides Society was not original with me. It had been started in other communities. I think Phoenix, Arizona was one of the first. California had had it. There were some scattered around. The idea being that if you could get physicians to participate in some way, on some level, with other Jewish physicians, that would attract them and draw their interest into Jewish affairs. Most physicians, like me, got so involved with the development of their careers and development of their families that they didn't really have the time to be active in Jewish affairs, and they felt that there was a definite need, particularly now that we no longer in Pittsburgh had a Jewish hospital. We've talked about that in previous discussions, how there was no longer a Jewish hospital, and therefore, to a large extent, Jewish physicians were not in contact with one another. So it was my idea if we could get people involved in the Maimonides Society idea.
I was shocked to find out that I sent out a letter, and I thought it was a pretty hard-hitting letter. The response was overwhelming. Following that letter, we had over 200 people subscribe to membership. The membership required that the individual had to donate to the UJF a minimum of $1,800. So the Maimonides Society then took off from there. We have the president of Sidney Bucis, who was a major leader in the Jewish community for many years, and we have other activities. For instance, we developed activities of helping Jewish Soviet Jewish doctors get integrated, helping foreign Jews in medicine get involved in advanced educational programs. We provide free medical service for Jewish immigrants and so forth. And so, and we also have lectures and so on and so forth. This has become a major activity. And from that, I was given a very, very great honor. They honored me at a banquet and gave me an award called the Maimonides Award, the only one so far that has been given. So that was a very flattering experience. Since that time, I have been active in the UJF affairs. I have been on the board of the local Jewish Federation, but more recently I have been asked to be chairman of the Midwestern United Jewish Appeal Maimonides Committee. And this is in the process of forming. We now have about 10 other communities who are in the process of developing Maimonides societies. And we have a steering committee made up of Jewish doctor representation from all over the Midwest, including Detroit, Chicago, Cleveland, Columbus, Cincinnati, St. Louis, Kansas City, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Dallas, Texas, Denver, Colorado, et cetera, et cetera. It's amazing how many communities and how many places where there are Jewish doctors. As a matter of fact, just today, right before this interview, I was called by the United Jewish Appeal Office in Chicago and asked to set up a meeting of the steering committee for the first time. I think that our life as Jews in the community has remained sacrosanct. We identify very strongly. We have many non-Jewish friends, but they all know exactly where we stand. We have been deeply engaged in the struggle to develop a sound and safe, secure Israel. We have been deeply involved in the process of fighting anti-Semitism wherever it raises its ugly head, and both Fidel and I are fairly prominent in the Gentile community in that sense. Everybody, for example, at my hospital, who for many years there were very few Jews, know exactly who I am and what I stand for. I have made that a singular point of my life. I would point out that what was impossible 10 years or 20 years ago at Allegheny General Hospital has finally happened, and that's my neighbor across the street, Dr. Stanley Marks, is now president of the staff. So time marches on and things are improving. Where we go from here, I'm in the process of retiring. I do now no surgery. I stopped January 1st of 1995 for a number of reasons. I felt that age 72, I did discuss that, yeah. So that I'm now active with the medical legal consultation. As a matter of fact, today I did the deposition. Thursday I have another deposition. this is a necessary work that has to be done and keeps me involved and interested. But I do have a lot more free time, and I'm able to work on such things as this Jewish historical development and my Maimonides Society development. I have recently accepted a new title or job, and that is the the news to Howard. That is the chairman of the Jewish Family Assistance Fund. I've been the vice chairman, which hasn't really meant anything. This is a new organization which was formed 10 years ago by Herman and Helen Lipsitz. They singularly gave a large sum of money to form a charitable fund. I remember at the time I was somewhat skeptical about why they just don't give that money to the United Jewish Fund, or at that time I wanted it for the Hebrew Institute. They did give us money for the Hebrew Institute. They bought us for the building next door, which has become part of our Hebrew Institute asset. They put this money into a cash fund, and through the state formed a board of directors and made it a charitable fund development. I was asked then to serve on the board, and I did, and then subsequently was told one day that I was vice chairman. But I really didn't take it too seriously, and I really didn't do very much with it. Elliot Finkel has been the chairman. Herman and Helen Lipsitz are on the board. There are another group of men, a lot of what I consider to be salt-of-the-earth kind of people, not real rich people, not flamboyant people, not fundraisers, not hard workers, but just down-to-earth, sound people, like Abe Cohen.
Abe
is one of the main forces.
Yeah.
Abe is a survivor of the Holocaust and a wonderful man with an old-fashioned Jewish, Polish, Jewish accent. There's Jaime Weiss, who you know from the Hebrew Institute days,
yes.
And Saul Rubin, who you know from the Hebrew Institute days. At any rate, these men have been running this organization. I just want to say a little about it. At the time, as I said, I wasn't too interested. But I started to go to the meetings at least once or twice a year as my retirement progressed, and I saw what they were doing. And I started to question, why are they doing it? Why isn't somebody else doing it? They were giving small amounts of money to people who were hard up. Let me give you some examples. A woman works for a living. Her husband works. Her husband gets sick, and she's got to stay home to take care of him, or else hire a nurse, for which they're not insured. Hospitals don't keep people very long, so she has to be home. So she has no money to buy groceries for the time she's staying home. It's only going to be 2 weeks. Where does she get $200 to do that? There's nowhere. We have no charity that provides that. Now, this new organization will provide that.
How do the people find out about it?
Well, that's a good question. This is an issue we discussed at the last board meeting. How do we get more people to utilize this service? And we're in the process of developing that. But I want to just say that I'll tell a little anecdote of how I became president or chairman of the board. And the executive committee, Elliot Finkel's now in his 80s, and he wants to do less and less, correctly so. And the executive committee asked, the nominating committee said to me, would you take over as president of this organization? Let me just tell you what they did. Last year, this organization serviced 199 applicants and gave away a total of $25,000. The money came from mainly proceeds of investments of the original Herman and Helen Lipsitz Fund, which provided, I think, about $15,000. They gave an additional $5,000 in current cash. We have a dinner once a year, not a dinner, but a luncheon meeting once a year, and that raises about $10,000 in cash, just asking people to come and give whatever they want to give, no fixed fee. so that we raise the $25,000 and are able to put away enough money each year so that the original fund, which was $50,000, is now up to $100,000, the proceeds of which are used to help poor people. The board is concerned because we only helped 199 people last year. What were some of the things we did? One woman was told she needed a hearing aid, or she couldn't come back to work because she didn't hear so well anymore. But she had a low-paying, minimum-wage job. She had Blue Cross and Blue Shield, but the Blue Cross and Blue Shield did not pay for a hearing aid. So this organization arranged to get this woman a hearing aid, pay for it. We got it wholesale through our friend Dr. Sidney Busis, and this is what this organization does. We have Jews who come to town, don't have family, they come from Soviet Russia, wherever. They need $100 for this, $200 for that, $400 for that. They have a good story, they come recommend it, we give it to them. No strings attached. Now there is in Pittsburgh a Hebrew Free Loan Society, but that's an official organization. You have to be eligible to receive a loan, and you have to pay it back. And if you don't pay it back, you never can get another one. Well, what we have done in a number of instances, when the Hebrew Free Loan lends the money, we endorse the note. The patient, if the invalid, I say patient, if the client can't pay it back, then we will guarantee to pay it back. So that when I was asked to become chairman by Saul Rubin, who was chairman of the nominating committee, I said, "Saul, I really don't know that I want to get involved again in another organization. I'm up to my ears with politics. I'll talk a little about the politics of the situation, but I don't know if there's any tape left here, but I don't want to get more involved." I went to the office one day, and my secretary said, "You know, Mr. Rubin called, and he wants to know if you're going to take that job as chairman of the it's now called the Jewish Family Assistance Fund, the name was recently changed." And I said, "No, I don't think so." She says, "Dr. Kessler, you know, I've helped you on all of your campaigns, Jewish physicians for AIPAC. Year in and year we raise money for AIPAC. Jesse Cohn and I work for AIPAC. We have one meeting a year, we raise $100,000 every year for AIPAC with one meeting. We've been doing this for years. You raise money for Spectre, you raise money for Washington, but of all the things that I read about that you do in the mail that comes across my desk, this is the best organization of all." She says, "This is the only organization where you really help a person who's down and out." I said, "Okay, I'm going to take the job. You talked me into it." So I went to we had an executive committee meeting. I said, "I accept." So I'm now the chairman of that committee. I'm going to make Howard Braun do some work, too, for that committee. So, at any rate, I just want to pass on a little bit and talk about politics and the Jewish community, because I've been heavily involved in that. Because of AIPAC, you inevitably get involved. People ask you to do things. It is extremely important that the Jewish community understand that they should have an interest and involvement in politics and politics. There, for instance, just this past month, 93 senators signed a letter to the president urging that the United States move its capital, its embassy, from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. 93 senators. I can assure you absolutely that all 93 senators didn't do it because they loved Jews, but they did it because, and rightfully so, Israel is a trusted ally, but more important because we as fundraisers and AIPAC lobbyist has been able to convince people who are elected to office that this is in the best interest of the United States. And the final analysis, when you look at the amount of money that is given for senators, just for example, senatorial campaigns, about 50% comes from Jewish profits. And that's what talks. Now, it's interesting, we have a lot of rich Jewish men who use this for personal aggrandizement and power, but by and large, a lot of this money comes from people like me who give $200, $400, $500. And as a matter of fact, this is Wednesday night. Tomorrow night, we have a meeting at the Concordia Club with Senator Rick Santorum. Rick Santorum, when he ran for the Congress from the Mount Lebanon district, AIPAC called me and said, Lake, can you raise some money to send Congressman Santorum to Israel? And I said, sure. In 2.5 hours on the telephone, I raised $3,600 and sent him to Israel. I've never received such a gorgeous letter of thanks from anybody in my life as I received from Rick Santorum about how impressed he was with Israel and how much it meant to him to be in Israel. That man will forever vote on all bills having to do with the support for the security of Israel.
And there was talk that he was anti-Semitic.
Now, what happened? Rick Santorum decided to run for Senate. Rick Santorum called me on the telephone and said, I'm going to run for Senate. Will you support me? I said, I won't say, Rick. We have a wonderful senator, and I think you ought to wait a while. He said, I want to do this now. I said, then you're going to do it without my support, because we have a senator by the name of Wofford. And Wofford is 100% behind the Jewish community. And not only that, he's basically a liberal. And the Jewish community is basically liberal. So he said, well, I understand, and I won't hold it against you, but I have to run. All my advisors are advising it. So he ran, and he beat Wofford. Now he comes back to me, and he said, Lay, now I'm the senator. You've got to support me. Well, my wife said, no way am I going to support Rick Santorum, because he's against abortion, he's against women's rights, Jews, he's against, he wants school prayer, he's a conservative. I say, I have one bottom line. My bottom line is Israel. I'll support anybody who I know is going to vote for the security of my people. I don't agree with him, and he knows I don't. Now, tomorrow night, we're going to meet. We're going to have about 30 Jews. We're going to meet with him, and we're going to arrange for him to pay, retire some of his debt. About $15,000. He owes $60,000 from his last campaign. And I know that we're going to keep him in the Jewish voting column, and that's what I'm my major interest in. I can't get involved in the day-to-day politics of conservative, liberal, welfare reform, this and that. I've got to stick with where the money is as far as Jews are concerned, and what is best for Jews in this country. Now, how did I get involved in this? As I said, I started to work for AIPAC. My friend Jesse Cohn, who's a big worker, and one of the big money raisers for the city of Pittsburgh, got me involved. We went to college together, and as I said, we raised a lot of money. But you get involved. Now, who did I get involved with? You go and you talk to Arlen Specter, and Arlen's a great leader for the Jewish people. He's a great supporter of all things that have to do not only with Jewish affairs, but Israeli affairs, but Arlen's a great individual. And he wants to run for Senate, and he makes the big mistake of serving as the interrogator of a black woman in Congress, which almost destroyed him, because he acted like most lawyers act. He was severe, you know, intense, trying to extract the truth, that sort of thing that you see on television. But that's the way Arlen behaved. He didn't mean anything. He would have acted the same way if it was a white man. It just so happened it was a black woman. And as such, he came close to losing the last election. Because we were able to organize the Jewish community, and we did so with a very heavy campaign, which I was heavily involved as one of the leaders, we were able, in this Democratic county, to bring Arlen Specter in with a 15,000 vote plurality, even though most of the people who vote in this county, as we all know, are Democrats. Arlen won, And it's very important that he won, because he is a moderate voice in a very ultra-conservative environment today. So there was Arlen, there was Harris Walker. Harris Walker came to me. Well, let me tell the story if we have any time. Do we have anything? A very important story about Walker, because he's very involved in the Jewish community. Walker, I went to lobby him to, when he first was appointed to replace Hines on his death. When Hines was killed, Walker was appointed Vice President Casey. So I was asked to go see him and make sure that he would be in our, you know, they understood. We were right in the middle of the Jewish settlement issue in Israel, and Bush and Baker were hotly contesting that the Likud party was opening up new settlements. So I talked to him, and we had scheduled a meeting for 20 minutes. And I started to talk to him about the settlements issue, and he said he went out to his secretary and says, cancel our appointment. I want Dr. Kester to stay here because I want to learn all about this issue. It turns out that Walker had been in Israel in 19... 19-